Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castorbris Podcast with a K, available on castorbris.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Castorbris Podcast live, without a theme tune. With me are Brian Turnover and James McLean. Hi, chaps, how are you?
Great.
Overly lit.
Yeah, there's some great mood lighting going on with James.
You are fantastically lit. You are not overly lit.
Oh, He knows how to rub an ego. You can tell someone who deals with acting.
He certainly doesn't look like he's just come straight out of a Colin Baker era episode of Doctor Who, does he?
Yeah, so I see what you did there. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, thank you. Now, there's a funny story behind this week's podcast with the K. Basically, it was supposed to have just been James and Brian on Monday afternoon, as we normally do it. And as things turned out, it didn't record, did it?
No, it didn't.
So, in order to...
It was very good, though.
It did. It recorded nigh on 30 seconds at the beginning.
Was it a good 30 seconds?
No, it wasn't. It was me saying, I think I've got this recording.
So it wasn't even a 30 seconds we could use in the audio edit?
No, there was nothing there. It was just... Okay. That was it. It was really quite offensive.
Okay, offensive.
No, it created some offensive words, I can tell you. And in the evening, at this moment, I could even tell you what they were. No,
don't do that. So you, dear listener, should be watching this, or dear viewer even, at 11:15 UK time, or 6:15 sort of time, is it over there, Brian,
That's
now?
It.
Or
yep.
6:20, getting on for? And, right. and other times in the world, depending on what time it is where you are. Obviously, that's how time works in a 24-hour global calendar. Now I've got myself out of that little cul-de-sac, let's have a look at what we're going to be talking about this time. I think we're kind of largely agreed that we are going to recap on some of the things that that didn't record on Monday. And have we anything else? Is there anything anyone wants to talk about before we do that?
Nope.
Sounds like an AA meeting, doesn't it? I don't have anything to get off my chest. Do you? I can talk about my father. I've many things I should probably talk about my father about.
I think we should talk about this. How does it make you feel, James?
It made me repressed.
James, wait.
I repressed my pain and I became totally fixated on a pointless cheap TV show. What more can I say?
What? I think we should show the path that you're walking down.
Oh, the path? Well, you know, I don't think you can barely see my face and it's the path. Paths would gamma you out, mate. It'd be like a path to heaven.
No. You've opened a doorway for yourself. You showed me it before the podcast started. You've opened a doorway for yourself. You know that is a dark passage for any fan to start walking down.
Okay.
Wow. Is there an item that you purchased?
Oh, I see, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's going to lead to more purchases, you know it.
I doubt it, I really do, I'm not.
You say that, but can you see all of this? That all started with one.
Okay, we're possibly getting into, and hello to our two viewers.
A fun category?
We're possibly getting away from the point of Doctor Who.
He's talking about this. I went and...
It's Doctor Who!
I was at a convention to go and see an actor friend of mine, and I thought I'd come away with something, and yes, I went and bought one of the Tom Baker sonic screwdrivers, which cost me too much money, and it's just made turn over there very gleeful.
Okay, just out of interest, how much did it cost you?
Oh, I need to work this out in the currency of none of your business. Let me see, how does that go? Exchange rate of none of your business to... It cost me more than I wanted to pay, but less than what a lot of people I expected to pay.
Okay. Fair enough.
None of your
business, I suppose.
Good currency to have. I'm actually quite rich in none of your business.
Good. Well, I'm delighted for you. If only you could buy houses with none of your business.
Kind of business.
The world would be a much better place, wouldn't it? So, look, let's press on. A couple of things I want to talk about, first of all, before we get on to the kind of recapping the previous podcast. I'll turn my glasses off because my phone, which I'm using as a prompt, will reflect. First of all, Dalek's Master Plan, the comic book adaptation. We've sold 100 copies already, so we're halfway, basically. So I'm really pleased with that. I suspect Rick probably is as well. I did tell him that we were about to hit 100, and we will be having an announcement on the cast overs tomorrow to this effect. 100 copies. Excellent. Well done, everyone who's contributed. And, of course, it's going to Children in Need, the funds that we've raised. So everything other than the original £800 or so pounds that pays for the printing goes to Children in Need. So thank you, everyone, so far. Sad news, Barry Jackson died today. Barry Jackson was a British character actor who's probably best known for Midsummer Murders, in which he played Dr. George Bullard, the GP cum pathologist. But he also appeared in Doctor Who on three occasions. He was in The Romans and also in Mission to the Unknown, both in 1965. And he played Drax in The Armageddon Factor.
Yeah, Drax.
The core blimey, dodgy, dealing time lord.
He played Drax? Oh my god. Wow, I never put that together.
Yeah, yeah. Same guy. Yeah, he was also a fighter ranger as well, apparently. So he was had many strings to his bow. And he was 75. He died earlier today. So a little bit of sad news there. Hmm. And that takes us to... now, this was more pertinent when we originally discussed this week's podcast with a K. The fact, basically, this Time of the Doctor spoilers are out there. And from what I can tell, and I've seen photos to add a bit more context to it, I've seen photos that are allowed to be released this coming Saturday, and which basically corroborate these spoilers. These spoilers are pretty much, I would say, 95% accurate. And they were doing the rounds last week. They appeared in one of the weekend papers, or it was in The Sun, I think they appeared in last week. So there are quite a detailed spoiler for The Time of the Doctor in circulation. So in the traditions of Casterbridge, we would tell you to avoid them, basically, because they are detailed spoilers. These aren't Tom Baker having a ramble saying, oh, by the way, I'm in the 50th anniversary. Would you like a jelly baby? No, these are detailed spoilers. How did you approach this on Monday, guys?
Well, we said, and I still think it's quite pertinent, that we were kind of surprised that after the success of the surprise in the began, Name of the Doctor, Night of the Doctor, that you'd think that fandom would be embracing non-spoilers, you think, because everyone seemed to love the fact that they didn't know about it. It added to the infused excitement that it was Paul McGann.
Yeah,
if we'd known that was coming, that wouldn't have been half as much excitement. That first moment when you see him there, I'll always remember that now, as sad as that probably is. But I think we probably all will. So, yeah, I think it's... Well, it doesn't surprise me, but I think it's a shame, because I think people would enjoy the Christmas special so much more.
Yeah.
Because this is how stuff's written. Stuff is written on the basis of there being no spoilers. Spoilers are only there because they need to advertise. So that's why we get trailers. It's not because, you know, writers want to give you information. They want you to go in cold, ideally.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that people don't try to go in cold. They actually look for... I suppose it's picking at your Christmas presents, isn't it?
Well, and the other part of that's a shame is that even if you are trying to avoid it, which is another thing that we talked about, which is going back again to what I did, Christian, on Casterbris for Series 4, even avoiding Casterbris, it's very difficult to avoid spoilers, especially because there are people out there that don't care about avoiding them. They want to know them, and they're just going to talk about them freely. And it's just the world is too small now that there's really no place to hide from them completely. You can do a pretty good job of avoiding a lot of them and still having a great, a different experience, a much more enjoyable experience being as spoiler-free as you can. But it does seem very hard to stay completely spoiler-free. So it's a shame. Like, on one hand, they're out there, and it seems so easy to just say, avoid them, your experience will be better. But it's not that easy half the time, because even if you're not looking for them, you get them.
It's pretty rotten, though, of a major national newspaper to print them in such detail, these spoilers.
Well, but at the same time, if people actually didn't read them or didn't want them, they wouldn't do it. They, to a certain degree, I agree with you, but on the other hand, they are reflecting what their market will lap up, and people will buy a paper for spoilers.
Yeah, it's a shame. Dollar,
well, I don't think people would buy a paper from Charles. I mean, if you know...
That you, no, I think they will.
No, I don't think they would necessarily buy it. The information was already published in a thread on Gallifrey Base. I think what happened here is the Sun's picked up the same thread and read through it, adapted it, and then stuck it in a newspaper and kind of, you know, didn't say, didn't warn anyone that they were doing it. So yeah, newspaper pops through your letterbox the next morning, and you sat there with your full English breakfast at your dining table in your vest with your whippet, but having his breakfast, and your cloth cap sat on the hanging from the hook opposite. And I mean, this might be just my life I'm describing here, and being northern and everything. And there they are. There's the spoilers staring out at you. You know, I mean, the buyer doesn't decide the contents of the newspapers, do they? Not in advance, but possibly, you know, retrospectively they do.
To a degree, I agree, and to a degree, I don't really. I mean, if I wanted to avoid Doctor Who spoilers, I probably wouldn't buy The Sun.
You probably wouldn't buy The Sun anyway.
Well, but that's semantics, because obviously, yes, I personally wouldn't buy The Sun for my political and personal persuasion. But what I'm saying is if it's the same as, if I quite like, say, I'm going to name a website, say Den of Geek, which is quite a famous co-website. You know, if they started doing major spoilers, I wouldn't go there anymore. But if I knew that I wasn't bothered about that, then I would. And to a degree, again, it still reflects the sort of person who probably reads The Sun is going to be the sort of person who will be interested in such an article, who probably genuinely doesn't care about Doctor Who that much. And that's the sort of people, I suppose, are aiming it at. But I agree with you. However you want to paint it, I think the sad thing is that, like I say, these writers, whether you like the writer or not, whether you like the show or producers or not, or they're all working towards a task. And it's a real shame when people go out their way to sort of spoil what they're trying to create, and take it out of control. So at least while trailers do spoil you, they are to a certain degree sanctioned by the people who make it. So to a certain degree, they've said, right, fine, we've got to give away some of these little bits just to get people hooked in. So they've got the power to choose. But when a paper sort of takes away the power for the people creating the show to decide how much they release, I think it is a shame. I think you're right in that.
It is a shame, though, too, that we're talking about The Sun being the one who gave them out when you said that they were already over Gallifrey Base. I mean, the main source of information anymore is the Internet. That's where everybody gets it first. Whenever it's in print, it's always just printing secondhand information half the time.
I suppose Christian's point, though, would be that if you were going to Gallifrey Base to talk or look at discussions about the Christmas episode, to, in a sense, you know, sort of walking into the minefield. I suppose with The Sun, you're not necessarily walking into a minefield. You're walking down a street where someone's just dropped some mines, I'm now thinking is probably the most tasteless analogy I could make for such a trivial thing as a TV show. But, yeah. None of your business.
Okay, yeah, fair enough then. Okay, well, we've got a few viewers, and we've had a few comments. Oh, we've had a comment on Twitter that I just want to draw attention to, from the Angel Doctor, who says, have a great show tonight, guys. Looking forward to hearing what you thought of the Day of the Doctor. I'd give it 8 out of 10. Well, that was last week. We did that live as well, didn't we? That was on Sunday the 24th.
We did. Something we did sort of do on Monday, which obviously no one will hear now apart from myself and Brian in the back of our brains, but we did I did ask Brian, and I'll ask you as well, Christian.
Okay.
Weeks gone by, you've rewatched it again. Is your feelings the same? Have you warmed to it more? Have you chilled to it a little more?
I feel I've got to know it a bit more. The appearance of Tom Baker in the cinema kind of overwhelmed the actual dialogue of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And having rewatched that scene on several occasions, I can't watch it without, again, a tiny bit teary.
On something else I did mention to Brian, which I thought was kind of cool, my friend Karen brought this up. She said, I'll just say what I said to Brian, what's the last line that Tom Baker utters in Logopolis?
The last line he utters in Logopolis?
Yes, the character.
The moment has been prepared for... It's the end, but the moment has been prepared for.
Mm.
Right?
The moment.
Ah.
Mm. Interesting, right?
Oh.
Almost done with a Tom Baker. Ism.
Oh,
yes. Well, I do that quite often, don't I?
You do. That's why I was expecting it. But no, I thought it was kind of quite a cool point. I mean, I'm sure it's probably just coincidence, but we were saying, you know, maybe, you know, you could connect the curator to the watcher, and there's a sort of like a full circle, pardon the pun, going
hey.
On there.
No, going everywhere with the Doctor Who.
Right. Well, that's what we're here for. I just thought you're an old Doctor, to be honest, like a regenerated 50th Doctor or whatever. So, oh, I'm sick of this.
That's
National
the thing.
Gallery. I'll go there.
What I was saying too last time that I had found interesting was something that one of my friends had even mentioned to me, and while it's pretty much taken for read that that Tom Baker, that particular Tom Baker, is a future version of the Doctor who revisited that face that he wanted to revisit, they put this theory to me that I was like, well, you know what? It is interesting because Matt and Tom in that scene kind of do a little bit of dancing around the subject matter. And they don't, like, while they say it, they don't say it as outright as they did with Billy being the moment. And I was like, okay, so there's a little leeway for your theory. And I thought the theory was fun, so it's worth mentioning, which is that the fourth Doctor, or rather that Tom Baker, is really the fourth Doctor there. And while it's not exactly 100% screen accurate, that Goddard, or Oz, what was her name, the woman wearing the scarf now? I forgot her name again.
Osgood.
Osgood, thank you. For instance, my theory, my enhancement on this theory is that the whole museum is not the TARDIS. I know a lot of people were mooting that the museum might be the Doctor's TARDIS at some point, but my theory is that particular wing, the 3D exhibit, was his TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
This way the building was always standing there, but his exhibit was there. But that it could be the fourth Doctor, that when he gets there, he deals with UNIT, he dumps his scarf off on Asgard just for whatever, to look a little more normal, however. But it takes us back to Time Crash, with Tennant making Davison look older because he shorted out the time differential just by being there. And then you can have that happen with Smith and Tom Baker as the fourth Doctor. Now, granted, like I said, the scene pretty much tells you he's a future Doctor, and
yeah,
that's
the way
I'm taking it as read.
Yeah.
Well, the dialogue sort of contradicts that. That's what I like about the scene. Like I said, with the moment, they outright say Billy Piper is the moment. She's not Bad Wolf. She's the moment. But with the Tom Baker thing, he says, "Oh, well, maybe you'll do this," or "I don't know. Maybe that's not for me to say," or maybe, you know. And they both kind of say, "Yeah, that's what it is," but we're dancing around it. So it gives a little bit of leeway to this theory that it could actually be the fourth Doctor.
Yeah, but then that would be kind of like giving himself instructions, which would like break the first law of time, or the second law of time.
Well, I don't think
it'll be the first time that it's happened.
I don't think you can really.
It is the first time it's happened. He's never gone back in time and told himself to do something.
Forward in time.
I think that's true.
Well, it depends on whether you look going to extended media, don't you? I mean, you have a load of stuff.
Oh, yeah, you've got the seventh Doctor leaving himself.
And the sixth Doctor, yes, leaving.
Yeah.
But the seventh and the sixth sort of have in the comics anyway a certain amount of. You know, the Colin Baker Doctor was the one who was allegedly put the sofa for Sylvester to fall in Survival, things like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like theory. I personally think, obviously, naturally, it holds more weight that it is the future Doctor, and that sort of makes far more sense, because then you've got to suddenly start asking, well, why would Tom Baker's Doctor know all this? And surely, if he knows it, as if he knows his future to such an extent, surely that creates. I think it's a fun idea.
I think it should have explicitly given him a number and then really screwed with a future production team.
Well, that's the thing. That's the one good thing that I love about the whole Billy Piper situation is that they did specifically outright give you everything saying she is the moment. She's not Rose. She's not Bad Wolf. They did great there.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, with the Hurt Doctor, they went ahead and they made sure that you saw the regeneration from again so that you knew he is for sure the Doctor. And they made sure that you got the regeneration into Eccleston. This way, he made sure that there were no other Doctors that any other production team could slot within the continuity of the show.
Yeah.
You know, so he was very careful about doing all these things to say, yes, this is definitely happening. But then with Tom and Matt, there was that little bit of dancing. And I guess maybe it was because he didn't want to label the guy with a number in case we ever did get to the 50th Doctor, who knows. But it was a little weird that, like, everything else he kind of, like, and I'm going to say crammed down your throat, but I don't mean that in a bad way, because I think it was very good that he was very clear about those things. But he was very definite about them, whereas with the Tom Baker scene, and I don't think I would want it any other way, to be honest, because I liked the way he was dancing around it, just on a fun level, you know? But, and maybe that was for the 11th Doctor's benefit, this way he didn't really know when these things were going to happen in his future. But it was interesting that one moment he didn't make quite as definitive as the rest of it, even though, you know, we all agree it's definitely explicitly he's a future Doctor. But I just like the fact that there was wiggle room there, because I thought it was interesting, because it's Moffat's own theory, the shorting out the time differential making you look older. Yeah. You know? So I thought it was like, okay, that's kind of an interesting thing. It can happen there. I can go with that as a maybe.
Okay. We've got a message from Andrew Dick who tells us that he hates spoilers and avoids them. I think probably the best way to avoid spoilers these days is just to stay offline, isn't it?
Which is very difficult.
I think, to be honest, you can avoid spoilers. I mean, if I didn't talk to you guys, I didn't watch the trailers or teasers, I would avoid most spoilers. Mm. The times I started to get spoilers when I didn't want to is when I used to hang around places like Gallifrey Base, you know, back in 2005, 2006, and you... Yeah. Enter mistitled threads and things like that. But I think, to be fair, you can exist on the internet, provided you just don't go into Doctor Who communities. Avoid those. Go to your newspaper and do your emails and whatever. But
yeah, but you know what? My experience, and again, I wrote an article about this for Series 4. You know, my experience was you can, for the most part, avoid most of the spoilers, but when you're not expecting it, they're there. Like, for instance, I think during that Series 4, I think, if I remember correctly, my brother may have even told me a spoiler, and he represents the casual viewer, mm-hmm. which actually brings up a very good point that I want to make about Day of the Doctor.
Do they vote on this, the casual viewers?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, is there like a ballot, and does it say, like, Trevor Turnover on it, and say, do they get to put a cross next to his name and say, you're going to represent us?
Yeah. I see.
Is that a no?
Yes.
No, I think it is. I think it's a none of your business.
Yes, there we go.
There we go.
Oh, all right, Pinky.
We need to take back this podcast with a C, James. I think we need to do this.
This is none of your business. The podcast is this none of your business.
No, but seriously, my brother, basically, he watches the show. He enjoys the show, but he watches it as and when he can, not really when it's on. He doesn't delve into its history. He doesn't really visit the websites, but, you know, he hears news from friends here or there. He gets snippets, and he just thinks that it's common knowledge, and he'll say something about it to me, and it just comes out, and it's like, oh, I didn't know that bit. Pretty much anymore, I do, because I'm not avoiding the spoilers as much as I was, even though for the 50th I tried to avoid as much of them like I could, the best I could, rather. But my point was is that people who had the spoilers were not people that you thought you had to avoid. So what I found was trying to avoid the spoilers completely was just impossible. But you can avoid many of them, and I do recommend, for the best viewing possibly of an episode, definitely try and avoid those sorts of places that you know are going to give them to you outright. If you get some accidentally, well, then that's just going to happen. That's life. But if you go to those places purposely, you know you're going to fall into something much easier.
I mean, I would say to all fans, and this goes back to what we were saying the last few weeks, to avoid trailers if you can. I mean, because in the end, I mean, we talked about whether we should have had a trailer, you know, should the Comic Con have had the trailer, did we need a trailer? But the trailer, while it didn't do the episode in order, you could pretty much guess the order of events through the trailer.
I don't know if you could do that. I think you'll guess more or less where the things you were watching came from, the screenshots.
I pretty much had an idea where things, you know, the way things were ordered, and it played very much true to what I imagined. And that was my own fault, because I watched the trailer. I didn't need to watch it. Well, I did, obviously, for us, I guess. But just generally speaking, if you don't need to record podcasts for a Doctor Who magazine website, then don't watch trailers, because you know when it's going to be on. You don't need reminding. You're a Doctor Who fan, for God's sake.
You know, for me, I don't think the trailer was so much of an issue, because, I mean, let's be honest, there's always trailers. At the end of every episode, there's a trailer. Forget the 50th, you know, at the end of every episode, there was a trailer. For me, the thing that I thought was one of the worst things that they did was give a clip of how Matt Smith ended up with David Tennant in the 50th to news shows or interview shows, you know, like, I forget which one it was actually on now, but when I saw that, I was really shocked that they went ahead and showed you how those two came to meet, because I would have thought that would have been one of the greatest moments.
Yeah, but that's a big buzz thing, though, isn't it? That's why they did that. They wanted to get buzz of the two characters meeting.
But that's the kicker.
Well, you know they're meeting. That's the thing. That's the whole point of the story is that these three doctors are getting together. It's how they get together is what the fans wanted to see. But showing that to them on like a morning breakfast show rather than showing them in the 50th, that to me was what was wrong. You know, showing David Tennant berating a rabbit, you know, like that's funny. That's okay. You don't really know where that's going to fall in. That's silly. But showing Matt and him get together, they might as well have just shown how John Hurt got into it as well. And to be honest, when you see that portal open up and the Fez falls to John Hurt, you know, okay, well, they're all getting together that easily because I've already seen the other bit. So that to me was a little too much information.
And I think the other thing that gave me too much information is that there was virtually no scene sets in the show that weren't in the trailer. The trailer pretty much gave you every scene that you would see. You know, the Gallifrey War, the Gallifrey on ground level, the place where the moment was, the out, you know, the woods. The only thing castle. It didn't give you was the actual jail cell in the castle, pretty much. And that was pretty much the only scene that was missing. Everything else was virtually there. And no, I think that was there as well.
When the 10th Doctor says, I want to know where I'm going.
Yes, yeah. That's true. Yeah. So every scene was... And I think that's probably what I felt. Not necessarily that I knew the order of everything, but I felt, at the end of the day, the Doctor, I felt there was, apart from the Baker scene, there wasn't anything left to surprise me because all the scene sets had been given away in the trailer, which, as we say, that's part of PR, but it's unfortunate.
It's a bit OTT, that, really, I suppose. I think it's a bit more than they usually do.
I thought it was a bit more. When I came to see it and I started rolling through it, I started to feel, my God, I think I've pretty much seen every visual basis for every structure for everything that's in this story, and I had. And so, and that was all my own fault, and I just... Part of me just wishes I'd watched it in the same way I got to watch Night of the Doctor, being utterly blank to it, not knowing where it was going to go.
And so do we, because you perhaps be whinging less about it.
Yes, probably.
Well, you know what, though? This brings up an interesting point, though, that I did want to make about the Day of the Doctor, because avoiding the spoilers or avoiding the trailers actually can cause some issues. Not just the trailers, but like things connected to the story, because... The reason I say this is the same thing that I said in 2005 when you guys got the Children in Need post-regeneration scene with David Tennant. A lot of Americans were lost going from the end of Series 1 to the Christmas invasion because they didn't understand why the Doctor would be fine at the end of Series 1 after he regenerated and going on his way to Barcelona and then suddenly crashing on Earth on Christmas Eve being out of his mind. A lot of people were lost because they didn't see that post-regeneration scene after seeing the 50th. A couple of things I think they could have done better. As much as I really liked the Night of the Doctor being its own thing, I think it should have been part of the 50th. And the scene with Hurt regenerating into Eccleston, as much as I noticed that you do see a heck of a lot more, you see his chin, you see his eyes, you see a lot more of his facial features come in, it's a little too subtle because after the 50th had aired, my brother had contacted me and he said, okay, so who was he then? Was he a doctor before the first one? Was he this? Was he that? And I said, did you see the name of the doctor? And he said, no, I didn't see that. And so not having seen the name of the doctor, the casual viewer, again, is being represented by my brother here, had no idea who John Hurt was, where in the line he fell.
Yeah, but missing an hour-long episode is a bit different to missing like a three-minute...
He didn't miss an hour-long episode. He missed a seven-minute...
He missed the name of the doctor, you said.
No, I'm the Night of the Doctor.
Oh, the Night of the Doctor, right, okay.
Yes, he missed the Night of the Doctor, which is where it tells you exactly who John Hurt is. So sorry, that was my mistake. So to me, it was the same exact thing going back to 2005 when you had the post-regeneration scene with David Tennant. Those two things should have been a part of the stories that came after them because they were very important linking pieces. And I wasn't aware of that because to me... You know, we had all kind of had our speculations of who Hurt was just based on the fact that he was in a time war, but my brother's not a casual fan, or excuse me, a classic fan, so he doesn't really know all the doctors that well. He knows the new series, and he didn't know where this lined up because of that one episode that he missed and because of the fact that when he regenerated at the end, if you blink, you miss it. You don't really see that it's Eccleston's face there, essentially. So that, to me, is one thing I wanted to bring up. Like, avoiding spoilers... makes sense to a degree, but there are certain things that you do kind of need to watch in order to understand, and while that's not technically a trailer, I think that they should have, because we also didn't get Night of the Doctor really here in America like you guys got. We heard people post it on Facebook saying, you must watch this, and unless you saw it on Facebook somehow, you really didn't know about it if you were the casual viewer.
Okay. Okay, well, look, we'll move away from the Day of the Doctor in a moment. I just want to just go over some of the figures of the ones that are available. We know that it did really well worldwide. It was scheduled in 96 countries, cinemas, TV shows, multiple screenings in some countries, like on the week, on the Saturday, and again later on. Or if it was, say, Australia had two screens, had one in the daft o'clock that it was for the simulcast, and then later on when people were actually awake to watch it. Then there's BBC iPlayer. 12 million views or so in the UK, which made it the most watched drama of 2013 so far. which isn't bad going. And then there's BBC iPlayer, where we found out this week that 1.3 million views within the first 24 hours after the broadcast. And in total, 2.9 million requests on iPlayer, which is more than the 2012 Olympic opening ceremony. Which isn't bad, is it?
No, it's very good. Very good.
And this is Doctor Who we're talking about. It's not like we're talking about, you know... We're not talking about Sherlock. We're talking about Doctor Who. Yeah. Okay, so that's the Day of the Doctor. And the Time of the Doctor spoiler warning. We've done that. We've done Barry Jackson. So, now then. I'm imagining, chaps, that a big chunk of the podcast that didn't record, the Lost podcast, we may call it briefly, not to be confused with the actual Lost podcast,
yeah, which will come on
one day. Yeah, I am imagining that you spent quite a bit of time discussing the light at the end. Is that right?
We did.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. Okay. I now, as I'm essentially the viewer, the listener here, who didn't get to hear the discussion of the light at the end. I'm with you, dear viewer, dear listener. I don't know what happened. I thought we could perhaps summarise your general opinions of the light at the end. So without forcing you to sort of retread the same emotional, disappointing experience from Monday, I don't want to reignite any anger in James.
I really wanted a dramatic reenactment.
I say again?
I really wanted a dramatic reenactment. You know, I wanted actors to come in and play the two of us.
That's what I'm scared of, actually. You know? I know what James gets like. We've all seen James when he gets emotive. We've all heard him when he starts getting wound up about things. But you're Mr. Cool. I don't really want to see that from you.
I'll play it cool. I'll continue. I'll go first. How's that?
Well, I'll tell you what, before you do that, because, I mean, there was a reason why I wasn't able to attend the original podcast. Well, there's a couple of reasons. And one of those reasons was, this wasn't a specific reason, one of the reasons affected my ability to listen to the rest of the light at the end. So as it stands, I've only made it to the end of the first episode, but I'm going to accept spoilers.
Right, okay. Fair enough. You're into the first episode. Okay, yeah. I think that's doable without spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay. Either way, however it turns out. So, you know, without getting upset and retreading old ground, give us your light at the end discussion as best you can.
Okay, I will. I enjoyed it. It was a good story, mm-hmm. In my opinion. I had fun with it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was well told. It was an interesting concept how they made it work, how everybody came together, and I liked the little ties, obviously, to the past. And I will say, there have been other Big Finish stories that probably were far superior because they could do so much more, but that's always what you get with multi-doctor stories, I guess, because you're trying to do a lot more with a lot of the same characters. But I thought they handled it well. And, I had a point there and I just lost it. No, I thought it was very good for Big Finish. I thought it was fun. Oh, one thing I really liked about it was the fact that, because a lot of people will probably go into, well, I don't listen to Big Finish plays, I'll probably be lost. You won't be lost. What Big Finish did that I thought was great was, with the exception of Charlie for the Eighth Doctor, they dumped all of their original companions and they went with TV personality companions, and they even made, as James and I kind of talked about a little bit the last time, they even made the Sixth Doctor more his TV counterpart, which Colin Baker did fantastically. He seems to have no issue slipping back and forth between his Big Finish persona and his TV one. So I liked that. I liked the fact that anybody can pick this up. It doesn't really have ties to any of their other stories. It was just a good, fun anniversary story, and they did a really good job of it, I thought.
Okay. James?
I'm sort of mixed on it. On one hand, I think it was a nice attempt. I think it was enjoyable. I've listened to it again today while I was working, and I enjoyed it. It's sort of like, it's very much like the Five Doctors in that sort of sense. It's I mean, one thing I did realise today when I was thinking about it, one of my slight problems with it, and it's past the nature of the beast, obviously, I think, is that there is no real dramatic journey in it at all. There is an event happens, which happens to the protagonists, so they're not actually going on a journey really themselves. They're dealing with something which is happening to them. And there isn't, I don't think it spoils anything by saying there is no real journey. Now, to be fair, a lot of classic Doctor Who was like that. It was about an adventure, but it didn't really have to have any dramatic notion to it. It was about solving a problem. So in that way, it's very true. Some people have said that they found Jeffrey Beavers a little too pantomime, I suppose the term would be, a little over the top. But then, you know, the Master was often like that in the classic series. You know, I think that was, to be fair, a fair nail on the head. Performance-wise, I think McGann did the best. I think Colin Baker was very strong in it as well. Yeah. Tom, as I said to Brian the other day, I think the script wasn't quite sharp enough for him. So I think he doesn't come across quite as good as he does in some of the other Big Finish versions, where he's closer to his 70s version. He seems a little withdrawn, and he just doesn't carry that flair that he often does. And I think that's a very stylized approach to scripting, which is hard to pull off. You know, I mean, you've got to think in the 70s, you've got people like Douglas Adams, you've got Chris Bouch, you've got some extremely talented script writers there, which gave his era a panache, or a memorable panache to its witticisms, which is very hard to emulate. So, yeah, I think it was good. I think it's fun. I think people should buy it. I think people will enjoy it. I think if you're a little disappointed on a second time run, you'll probably actually enjoy it for what it is. And I think it does them all a good justice. I think that's what's very important to say. I think he and Nick Briggs does a very good job in balancing out all the main Doctor roles. They all feel like they have a relevant part to the story. None of them feel underused or anyone overused. And the companions, there's some nice little cameos in there. There's some very good, I'm not going to give anything away, there's other Doctors in there, and they're voiced by various artists. And Fraser Hines, it does a particularly good one. I think people will be able to guess which. And I know some people have been a bit funny about it, but I liked William Russell, who did, spoiler away, he did the Hartnell Doctor in it. And I think that's an interesting approach, given his connection to Hartnell, and he's done it for a lot of audios. And it didn't take me away from the story. And I appreciate the fact that they gave him such a pivotal role, given his, you know, legacy in the show. So, sure. Yeah, but I think that's pretty much all I've got to say.
Okay, I'm interested by this comment about people thinking that the Master's too pantomime. This is the Beavers slash Pratt incarnation, voiced by Jeffrey Beavers, isn't it? With yes. You know, with Burns and, you know, that thing that the Burns
worked
in. Ken, and calling him panto. This is the Master who carried two TARDISes around with him and took people over with a bracelet, or a ring, or a thing around the neck. And then took people's bodies over, and he's been described as too panto.
Well, there's a couple of lines, I think even in the episode you've heard, where there is a sort of like, really, Doctor, I have you now, you're caught in my trap, and you will never escape it. It is very on the wire. I mean, I think the problem is a lot of Beavers' stuff, A Big Finish, has been written with a more contemporary approach to writing stories. If you take, for instance, Master being the obvious one. And I think people are so used to Beavers doing a more nuanced version for a more intelligent, and I know that sounds rude, and it's not to say that the writers weren't intelligent, but, you know, writing has evolved a lot in television, and audio writing has evolved a lot over the past 30 years. And stories they do now are more nuanced, they are more about drama, they are more about character progression or character journeys. And so they see a Beavers, which this Beavers isn't meant to be. And one of the things I will say about Briggs' work is that while I think sometimes he does lack a little bit of flair, at the same time, he has managed to write the Doctors correctly to a certain degree. I mean, Colin Baker feels like Colin Baker from the classic TV show, not his Big Finish version. Same for Sylvester. And Leela's great in it as well, so to name one of the characters which comes across. There's just a couple of lines here and there where we were saying before, myself and Brian, that you just lack a little bit of panache. Like, and you'll have heard this if you've watched the first episode, where Ace and Perry clocks Ace calling the Doctor Professor, which is, why do you call her a professor? And she sort of says, well, I just do. And you think, it might have looked kind of funny on paper, but it just feels a bit absent as a line. There's not enough there to really make it to stick. It just feels a bit needless. And there's a bit of that now and there where they talk about the console rooms or, you know, And there's a bit where Ace actually goes through and names all the seven doctors that she's just seen in order of their continuity, using very, very classic expressions of to depict them all. And I suppose you could argue maybe they're still there slightly in form and she's just rattling off. But it's just a couple of bits. And there's one thing I did actually read on Big Finish Forum, someone said today, which, well, I read it today, which I thought was really quite... Oh, I can't, because it would spoil it for you. I will just simply say there is actually a possible continuity error that's made in the last 3 minutes, or last 30 seconds, actually.
Oh, you need to tell me that afterward. I will say, though, adding to what you said with Beavers being a bit more panto and so on, like pretty much what you and I have both been saying is that they seem to have made this episode more like the classic series.
Yes, definitely.
And
definitely.
That actually really kind of is a lot more interesting now for some reason this day than last day, because it hit me. You have the new series, which clearly is telling a more new series kind of story. They're really progressing things in the future, and here we have an anniversary special with the classic Doctors that's really for fans. I mean, let's face it, how many casual people are going to pick this up? It's for fans.
Yeah.
So having Beavers actually be more of a panto kind of master, which, let's be honest, I mean, Anthony Ainley relished that, you know, so that's something that people are used to. It seems like they may have gone out of their way, especially using classic companions, classic series companions only, classic series interpretations of the Doctors only, with the exception of Paul McGann, that they may have actually tried to make this a true classic 50th experience. And thinking about it in that way, I think they really did succeed, aside from those couple of little jokes like you had mentioned, which I agree with, but certainly with the professor moment with Ace. I really think that they actually did do that. You can now look at it as, I have a classic series 50th anniversary, and I have a new series, or overall series 50th anniversary, and that's kind of a very interesting aspect.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. I think the more I listened to it, the more I realized how much they were going for that classic vibe. There's some elements of the time stuff I don't think quite... It doesn't hold well in the sense that it would have held as well as it would if it was actually a TV episode, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's things like, you know, suddenly you'll have characters disappearing, and you're kind of thinking, you know, that's a bit odd. You know, if it's all folding in, why are they just suddenly popping out now? It just seems a bit arbitrary. But then the show used to do that. It used to be arbitrary. It used to not always carry that sort of conformity of rationale. So, yeah, I think you just got to go in looking at it as a classic story and expecting some of the shallowness and foibles that you'd expect in a classic episode, and that's what it does.
Did you just say foibles?
I did, didn't I?
That must be a podcast first.
Possibly. I know. I was thinking that as I said it. Part of me was quite pleased with myself, and the other part was absolutely horrified.
You know what's interesting, though, foibles aside, I think going back, I'm trying to go through all of the Big Finish stories since they began. I think this is probably the first time they've ever outright told a story that really felt classic. Like, for the most part, they told a lot of modern storytelling, like, from the beginning. They changed Colin Baker from the beginning, even though they tried to set things within the eras. Peter Davison has never really been his TV doctor within the Big Finish plays. Not that it's a bad thing. He's a very good doctor in the Big Finish plays as well as TV. But this actually seems like it's the first time that they've actually tried to tell a story within that vein. While there's still a little bit more of a modernized telling in there, I had never realized that about them. You know, I had originally thought that they tried to just slot stories that would seamlessly fit in the beginning, but they were always on a grander scale. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Would it be... I don't know... You know how, like, James discussed his purchase of a sonic screwdriver earlier. And, you know, we quite regularly quiz Brian on his trips to conventions. So I'm wondering if anyone wants to ask me about what I was doing on Tuesday evening.
I don't think it's any of our business.
Okay.
you should have expected that.
let's play to his ego. Go on, you go for it, Brian.
What the heck were you doing on Tuesday evening?
Who, me?
Yeah, you!
Well, it's funny, actually. I got invited to the local BBC studio in order to talk about Doctor Who.
Go on, man!
Which I did for about 30 minutes. And almost constantly for 30 minutes. It was basically... The guy
Bob Fisher, who he wrote a book a few years ago called Whiffle Leave It to Full, in which he went to many, many conventions and talks about all these different sci-fi conventions. And he's a broadcaster on our local BBC radio station, Tees. And he's doing this little documentary about Doctor Who fans on Teesside. And I think it's going out later this month or around Christmas sort of time. I don't know how much. I shouldn't imagine there'll be much of me. I know he must have spoken to about 10 different people, and it can't be more than an hour long. So maybe there'll be a couple of different voices of me and clips of me in there, and you won't be able to tell it's me because I sound like James Earl Jones by the end of the night. After half an hour of talking with just a small cup of tea to lubricate my throat, I sounded absolutely dreadful. But now, I'd like to thank Bob Fisher for inviting me.
I didn't know that they actually invited you down. I thought it was like a phone thing. So that's no, pretty no, cool. No, what no, was that like?
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. I know Middlesbrough quite well, but I wasn't totally sure where the studio... I know where the studio is, and I know, you know, many years ago, it used to have kind of like... they used to do TV shows from inside, and you could like broadcast on like Children in Need Night and stuff like that. And you could see outside, and there'd be people, goons knocking on the window, all that sort of nonsense. You'd get live TV. So I always known where the station building was. But I didn't know how to get into it for these sort of purposes. So he gave me some instructions. I had to kind of drive round the back of a bus station near a multi-story car park, turn left, turn left, turn left again. I didn't take the third left. I carried on and came to the end of the street. And it turns out the first left was like a U-shaped road, and it was one way. So I came to the end of that road, but I couldn't get into it. So while I was parked up using Google Maps to check, there's this tap on the window. And some rancid old prosy knocking on my car window, asking if I want. If I'd like to pay her for services.
Did you?
I'm not knocking the sex industry.
Asking if you did. Incredible.
No, I didn't.
Let's get that out. Because I feel like you were kind of.
I had a date with a radio studio.
Just kind of circumnavigating that, yeah.
Yeah.
What's that after?
Wait, did she give you directions?
No, she didn't give me that. I gave her directions.
Oh, did you?
Yes,
really? What did you ask her? What did you need doing?
I didn't ask her any directions. I gave her directions.
She just knew. Away from your...
Away from my car, yes.
Your car? Brilliant.
Go away. It was possibly the most polite way I can put that on here. And it was a really good discussion. It was largely a monologue.
You're talking about the prostitute.
No, no, no. In the studio.
She's a big Doctor Who fan as well, then.
Yeah, she came in with us as well. Yeah, yeah. She had
I see.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've got to let Sid James know about this. This is just gold. He'll love it.
Go on then.
So when will this air? Do you know?
I'm clearly close to the light at the end of the tunnel. Excuse the pun. So he's probably just up there somewhere, just looking down at me.
Yeah. Well, he's ghosts up here apparently in Sunderland.
Well, with such quality people walking the streets, I'm not surprised. Making innocuous comments about them.
Yes.
Remarks about their foibles.
Believe it's on air at the end of this month.
The prostitute. Yeah,
maybe early next month. No, we're back to this BBC's documentary. Yes, I don't know when the prostitute's going.
I'm terribly sorry, but the prostitute has upstaged your story.
Next week.
I find this fascinating.
We'll be the podcast with the K.
Because the only time I've ever heard of this ever happening is in films, in Hollywood films, where someone stops, Frasier or something. So I'm finding this hard to believe this actually happened without you instigating it in some way. I don't know, do you have to flash your lamps a couple of times? And then she flashes hers.
I did have flashing lights because I put my hazards on in case a bus came up. Basically, because I was on a bus route. I was on the bus line as well.
So, dear me. Christian Corley, this is brilliant.
podcast with a prostitute. You did a good job on this one, so there you go. You got the proscast with a K.
Yes, very good.
Indeed, yes.
Very good. So you went and talked about Doctor Who and stuff, and then there was this prostitution.
Yeah, about growing up in the 80s as a Doctor Who fan, yeah. Which, I pointed out, I don't think I've given anything away here. I don't think this is a spoiler. But it never really occurred to me that other people didn't watch Doctor Who.
When you were little?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I just thought everyone was watching Doctor Who, so I didn't really know that I was a Doctor Who fan, because I thought everyone was watching Doctor Who, so You know where I'm coming from. People, we don't call ourselves fans of breathing because we breathe, and everyone does it. I didn't call myself a Doctor Who fan because I thought everyone was watching Doctor Who. But that's one of many revelations that came out that night. Yeah.
You know, it was a bit of a different experience for me because it was on a public TV station, as you know, here in America, and when I was little, I didn't know the difference between public TV and normal TV. I had no clue. All I knew was that there were good shows on that thing. So in a sense, it's the same. I just assumed people were watching it, but it became pretty apparent when trying to talk to your friends about it that you were one of the very few people watching it. Because, to be honest, growing up with it, I know my brother watched a couple with me because one of my uncles at the time, we both thought looked like Fifth Doctor, so we would talk about that quite a bit. But with my friends growing up, it wasn't really until high school that I started to really find other people who were into it. And I was watching originally when I was little, like 8 or 9, 10, something like that. So my initial reaction was always, this was just a TV that was everywhere, because it was clearly it was on TV. But then you get an understanding of what PBS is and that, you know, most people are watching the big networks rather than that. And that apparently that most people include your friends. So my experience was a little bit different in that respect. I was a bit of a lone Doctor Who fan for quite a while, and I can't imagine now, because now clearly everybody is watching it.
What about you, Jake?
I moved from place to place, which is my excuse to why I didn't have hardly any friends, and I was on no one's Christmas Santa list. That's just because of that. When I got to about 11, I went to high school, I did actually have one friend called Paul who was very, very into Doctor Who, and then eventually found one of my teachers, a guy called David, strangely enough, called David J. Howes, which is very close to David J. Howe, who does a lot of the stuff for the Doctor Who. But it's a totally different person. In fact, actually, my teacher, David J. Howes, was one of the illustrators in the Key to Time book. One of his was submitted. So if you've got the Key to Time book, if you look for David J. Howes in there, that's my teacher.
But he's not David J. Howe.
But he's not David J. Howe of Collectability Corner fame and everything else. Who's a very nice guy from what I understand. And he actually had, because he was obviously older than us, he had virtually all the all the 80s on videotape.
Can I just stop you there? Is this the same David J. Howe who said that a book about Casterbus wouldn't sell?
Well, that's obviously not my David J. Howes. We're obviously talking about David J. Howe, the person who the book is in the cell. But it was very, very good at getting me my copy of Time Champions sorted when there was a slight hiccup, so I'm not going to knock him.
Good for him.
And he was very funny in Collectability Corner when he did DWM.
Yeah.
But he had all the videos of the 1980s, which and a load from the 70s as well, which at the time, about, 89, and there was about Death to the Daleks and Robots of Death and Seeds of Death, and that was it. It was a great resource. So, it's funny enough, I think that was my fan, was those three people. And John Fitton catalogue, which at the time was the place where you went to go to get novelised. Do you remember John Fitton? Christian? No? He was one of those mail order sellers.
And sorry, you've got to prostitutes now. What did you say?
I think we know whose speciality that is. I'm talking about mail order catalogues for Doctor Who, and you're trying to wedge that into some sort of ring of prostitution, you grubby little man.
You said wedge.
This is good. You see, you need to get Christian past bedtime, and then he actually relaxes and opens up, and he sort of becomes a little naughty. Before that, he's very, very stiff and very serious. He's a father of twins, and his wife's not far from him, but now we can get the real side. So that was my connection, I suppose. But I know what you mean, because there was no sort of connection, there was no real fandom unless you sort of joined the Doctor Appreciation Society.
Or you were at university and you had access to the networks to the bulletin boards. That was about it, really.
Yeah, it was a weird time. And as a kid in the '80s, I think we've said many times before, you really had the Peter Hamings books and the novelizations, and that was it. And the novelizations was big. To have all novels was really exciting. I remember sort of buying them from John Fitton, the prostitute. He's not a prostitute. He was actually a very legitimate, great whole seller of Doctor merchandise. Can't knock him at all.
As far as we know.
As far as I know, and I'm sticking to that for all legal reasons, he seemed a very good man. You're not pulling me into your dark, twisted web calling. It was, I'd get the books from him, you know, Face of Evil, with its great, and it would all be nice and shiny and new, and you'd sit and read a novelization of the story you couldn't see.
Yeah.
And that was Who fandom. I just don't know how you'd survive now. As a kid now, if I lived now, all the stuff that comes out, I'd probably just explode. It's just too much.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. There is a lot of it, isn't there? Well, you know, but in the 80s, right, I had this toy, right? And I spent ages, weeks playing with these toys. And basically, they were cardboard train, police car, helicopter, fire engine, ambulance. They were just cardboard, so they were like two-dimensional. And they had plastic 3D wheels, so you could drive them around like that. And this is how high-tech they were. This was top-of-the-range high-techness in 1980, you know, 83, 84, whatever it was when I got it. There was this bulky sound effects box with a button on for each vehicle. And that's you know, that was high-tech toys in the 1980s. You didn't have to make them sound yourself. You had a machine that would do it for you quite badly. And that, now, look, you know, I get all these solid bright lights and flashy toys and things, and you press a button in the shop. And the toys are on the shelves, and they make noises, and they flash, and they have the transformer arms come back like that and go, with bright light that translates along the plastic, because they use a special plastic in transformer toys now. And all
try being a fan in the 80s as a kid.
In America.
Yes. Okay. We had, you know, if you wanted to play with a sonic screwdriver, you had to figure out how to make one out of a pen or an actual screwdriver.
Let's face it, you've done it enough times.
I really have.
Do you know, I always got the impression looking at the old sonic screwdriver, it always looks something like something you'd stick in your mouth in a dentist. And I'd think if I sort of went into that occupation, I'd have stolen half the stuff and made them into little sonic screwdrivers, which would be very sonic, and people would be very scared when they'd hear me with that. People don't.
Do you know, the funny thing is, I will say, working in the dental profession, that there are pieces there that I look at and go, that could be very
sonic-y.
But you know, honestly, like for years, I kind of agreed with other people where it looked more like that thing that the doctors look in your ears with.
Yes, that's true.
I kind of had always thought it looked more like that. Although, I'll be completely honest, I mean, I was completely fascinated with the sonic screwdriver as a kid, and it's what started me off. Like I said in the beginning of the podcast, with your sonic screwdriver starting you down this dark path, it's what started me off. All I wanted was a sonic screwdriver, so I wanted the Tom Baker sonic screwdriver, and that was the first prop that I had ever gotten. And from there, my prop collection just kept growing, because I kept going, well, I have the one I wanted, but there's more.
Would
and so
you
I went
settle
after the more.
For a sonic suitcase? Have you got the sonic suitcase yet?
Sonic suitcase.
Yeah.
Are you talking about that picture that went around Facebook with all the Sonics in it?
Or is no, I Sonic don't know suitcase. About? This is clearly something you don't know about. The Sonic suitcase is featured quite heavily in this book by Lance Parkin, Father Time.
Ah, now I
got it. All right, yeah.
And the Eighth Doctor stranded on Earth. He's stranded on Earth for 100 years, and he's you know, he doesn't know he's the Doctor. He doesn't have a TARDIS. Well, he does have a TARDIS, but it's just a blue box. There's nothing in it. And he eventually makes loads of money. By the 1980s, he becomes quite rich just by inventing stuff. And one gadget he's invented opens doors and things, and it's called a sonic suitcase. And he uses it once or twice in the later stages of the book. You haven't got this complete sonic collection unless you've got the sonic suitcase, frankly.
Can I store all my sonics in the sonic suitcase?
Possibly. Probably.
Multi-purpose. It sounds great. Sounds
It's funny how to a certain degree that what we did, what we wanted as a child, start manifesting as an adult. And, you know, like I've got, I mean, people can't really see it, but I was massively into Battle of the Planets when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things which sits by my desk is the God Phoenix, or the Phoenix. And I have that. I have I've got a scarf, a Tom Baker scarf, which was given to me, which I prize, and I have my I have a bullwhip that hangs dubiously.
Hello.
But when a prostitute comes over, horrifying. So those sort of things, they just sort of almost like finish off what I couldn't have as a kid. As you know, I've got that police box which sits on my on my back there, and it's just somehow sort of saying to the kid, I know you couldn't have this, and I'm sorry about that, but here it is now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, obviously, like, I even collected the actual toys for a little while, and that was fun. Like, that did satisfy that need that the child Brian had wanted all those years. Just, you know, playing with his G.I. Joes or his Star Wars figures, he would have loved to have had Doctor Who in the mix there and so on. And so I did that, but somehow it does. The props for me, they do seem to be filling that void a little bit more, because when I was a kid, more so than playing with the toys, I always loved to play pretend. I always loved to wear the Batman mask or the long scarf or whatever and run around the neighborhood and play. Even you know, we would play silly games like Chase or Kick the Can. I don't know if you guys had those by the same name over there, but just like where you just run around the neighborhood and it's kind of like playing, you know, tag with more rules, you know. But we would do like, okay, we're going to play G.I. Joe tag today. And I didn't feel like being G.I. Joe, so I would be Murdoch from the A-Team or something like that, you know? And that's partially why I guess I love acting so much now, is I love that kind of aspect of it, and the props kind of allow me that kind of sense of fandom again, where I can do that kind of role-play thing, even if it's just myself, you know, here playing at my desk like Stephen Moffat did with his toys and Peter Davison's five-ish doctors, you know, which I believe Stephen Moffat does that for real, by the way.
Okay.
But it's a good feeling. It's fun. I agree. Like, definitely having these bits and bobs. And I think, you know, there's millions of fans out there that agree with us about it. Any fandom, not just Doctor Who.
The only thing I would like is for them to produce more stuff which has actually function. Because I would have I would buy a sonic screwdriver which had a decent light that wasn't made out of plastic. You know what I mean? And was, I mean, like, they've done their sonic screwdriver, their 11th form, which has a screw end at the back. But it is very...
This one is a universal remote control. You can control your TV, DVD player, but you can control other things, your iPod with it. And it's nice because the it's a David Tennant sonic screwdriver, and the metal bits are actually metal. The only bit that's plastic is the handle, where on the real prop it's actually aluminum that was painted over. But really, it's very nicely done, and it has... It has 10 sound effects because it's the 10th Doctor sonic screwdriver, which is fun, but it's multifunction. So it is actually cool to sit there and play with your TV with a sonic screwdriver. So I agree with you. Like, something like this is cool because it's actually doing something that it could have done in the show. So more stuff like that definitely would really be very fun.
Curb crawling with a K has been suggested by Doc.
Oh, very good. I like that. How about Curb Crawley with a K?
Oh,
Curb Crawley. Oh,
Curb Crawling Crawley with a K.
I want that to be your nickname from now on. Crawley, I like that.
Oh dear. Right. Well, look. We're in this kind of hinterland between when we would normally do a podcast and when we actually do a podcast. So,
right. Do
you want to talk about the new poster, or shall we just get onto the recommendations and we'll do the poster on Monday? Because there'll be more photos on Monday as well. So,
well, maybe we should leave that to Monday then. I'm sure.
We'll leave that to Monday then. Okay. So, recommendations, chaps. It is that time of the evening.
Well, I'll tell you what. There was a recommendation that I did that no one got to hear. Okay. So I guess I'll start with that, since my recommendation really kind of hasn't changed.
Dalek Invasion of Earth.
What's that?
I said Dalek Invasion of Earth.
You know it.
I don't know.
How?
Stick James up there from the light above. He knows these things.
We were actually, one of the other things that we did actually discuss a little bit, Christian, when you weren't here, was Marco Polo. And okay. Not that we don't have to go into it right now, but I am going to bring it up as a comparison piece, because James made a very good point that finding Marco Polo might not be as grand as hearing it on audio, where your imagination can let the sets be as big as you want rather than studio-based. And that was one of the things that had made me really, as much as it's always been an enjoyable story, Dalek's Invasion of Earth, I really enjoyed the heck out of it this time around again, because how much location work there was for it. You know, there were studio sets, but it was really nice to see how free the show could have been or was within that story. It's a great story. It's a classic story, and obviously it's Susan's exit story, and it's got one of the First Doctor's most repeated speeches. So it's got so many magical things in it, but watching it again and just realizing how much location stuff they did and how much it enhances the story was really great. And so it's overall, it's a great DVD, period, extras and all, as James and I were also discussing, even down to the extra CGI effects that you can turn on at will if you want. So I highly recommend that because it's always an enjoyable watch, and the DVD is very, very worth it.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick with that
worth
one.
It.
Very, very worth it. Not just very.
Yeah.
Very, very.
Okay. I'm impressed by enthusiasm. James?
I'm trying to think what I've been listening to, because I've been listening to a hell of a lot of late. As I said...
Well, what did you recommend on Monday?
Protect and Survive, which was part of the BBC Radio 4 week of Doctor Who stories, I hadn't heard before, which deals with the Hexen Ace being caught on the cusp of a nuclear holocaust in the 80s.
And it's fancy, that one. I've not listened to that one yet.
It is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it's a really good bit of writing. It's beautifully done. It's primarily Doctorless, not totally, but primarily, and they hold it really well.
Okay.
It's a really stunning bit. And there was also other stuff that week which was really good. Farewell, Great Mastodon, which I think is probably one of the best BBC audio ventures, the Big Finish, sorry, have done. Which is based on the lost episode that was never commissioned, which deals with Alexander the Great, read by narrated by William Russell, Caroline Ford, and I checked the gentleman's name, and I've totally forgotten it again, who plays Alexander, and he does an absolutely fantastic job. I feel absolutely terrible and dirty and low-key lack of professionalism there. That's brilliant as well, and they also did Lucy Miller and To the Death, which is a fantastic end for the Eighth Doctor's one of his seasons. So I think I'm primarily recommending all of those.
Okay.
They were really, really good.
A lot of recommendations.
Finish.
You make it very easy for me to recommend the... And, you know, they might not have the complete set of extras on that we wanted it to, but The Day of the Doctor, DVD.
Right.
And the other DVD, the Adventure in Space and Time DVD, they're both out. So those are the things that I am recommending. I don't really think I need to tell you about them. You should have seen them already. If you haven't, they're great. And if you have, they're still great.
Yeah, it's not out here for me yet, so I haven't gotten to see what kind of extras are on The Day of the Doctor yet. So I'm excited.
That's the thing, because when the extras originally rumoured, it had... the Peter Davison thing on, didn't it?
One of them did, I had heard that, yes.
Yeah, but...
But it's not?
We haven't got that, no.
Ah, that's
so whether that's getting its own or not, we don't really know at the moment. Or if it's getting a release at all. I mean, let's hope it is getting a release.
Does it have any more content for The Night of the Doctor beyond the story, like any behind-the-scenes thing or interviews with Paul McGann?
Well, there is an interview with Paul McGann, isn't there?
The one that was just recently on the web?
Yeah, it's only 2 minutes long, isn't it?
It was that one, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's on the disc or not. I can't remember now. Actually, obviously, I've got a preview disc.
I hope so. It was a nice interview. I'd like to be able to
have a look
at
the disc. No, I can't remember now, because I've watched it a few times. I can't remember where I've watched it.
Sorry, can I just quickly name check that it was John Dorney who did Alexander the Great. And he's absolutely fantastic in it. He rules it. Sorry, carry on.
Excellent. Okay, yes, you can.
You realise he's already stopped listening since you didn't name him before.
I know,
The number of viewers has gone down since then.
Between Monday and now, I actually looked it up because I couldn't remember on Monday. I'll remember that, and I didn't.
Before you forgot his name, we had 5 viewers. Oh, yeah. We've now got 4, so he must have been the other viewer.
Yeah, he was a prostitute. Well, no, not he was the prostitute. No, it was the prostitute that you were speaking to.
She's going to turn off now. okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbridge podcast live with a L-I-V-E and a K. And next week we'll be back to audio only, probably. We'll just see how it goes, really. There's a few things going on with Skype changing, and that's usually what we used to record. You're not interested. In the mechanics of how we
just tell them podcast. It's none of their business.
It's none of your business. But if you are interested, just drop us an email and we'll explain all. So until next time, it's goodbye from all of us. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Oh, right, we're doing that thing. It's not going to work for me.
See, Charlie,
I got to hide. I got to duck out. There you go.
Okay, James?
I'm in a... There we go. It's actually a very close palm.